For this regular meeting of the Board of Directors for the Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District, I'd like to have Mr. Arigu lead us in a pledge of allegiance.
Our flag is bright in color, brilliant in courage, and firm in faith. To these, let us add our sincere pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Chapman, do you roll call?
Director Fellow, Director Trevino, and Director Reyes present.
Do we have a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
So moved. No opposition. So moved. Like to open public comment. Anyone wishing to discuss items should do so now. Board of Directors may allow additional input during this meeting. A 3-minute limit is requested. Anyone wishing to speak? Seeing no interest, I'll go ahead and close public comment. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
I would like to ask for one change to be made. It is for the January 3rd meeting on page 11955. I was on the roll call of votes. I'm listed as a nay for electing Director Chavez as Secretary of Treasury. Can you make it a change that to a yes?
Noted.
Okay. All in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Seeing opposition? So moved. Demands on general fund account.
President Rice, we have demands of almost $595,000 on the general fund partway through the month. Nothing unexpected to note. We do have the second draw on the grant agreement with Sunny Slope, and that project there for treating water is progressing nicely.
Move approval.
Second. All in favor? Aye. No opposition, so moved. Action item, discussion items, update regarding integrated resource plan developments. Mr. Chapman.
Yeah, this morning is the board's first opportunity to begin to see the work product prepared by our consultant, Camp Dresser McKee, on the district's integrated resources plan. Mr. David Ebersol and Mr. Dan Rodrigo are here this morning to share with us both the long-term demand forecast, how that was generated, answer the board's questions, the public's questions about why that demand forecast looks the way it does. That also enables us to determine what the gap is between existing resources available to the San Gabriel Valley and those future water supply, water demands. And importantly, a third part of this morning's discussion that will be led by Mr. Ebersol is an opportunity for the board to weigh in on the criteria that it would like to use in selecting future projects to help fill that gap. And so we've kept this agenda purposefully light to engage both the board and the public in discussion about the integrated resources plan. And this is one of several upcoming meetings, both with the board and the public and various stakeholder groups, including the producers and the water master, to help guide the development of this long-term resources plan. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Ebersol, who will take us through the first few slides, and then Mr. Rodrigo will talk about the demand forecast and the gap, and then Mr. Ebersol will start again with sort of pulling those criteria out of us.
Well, good morning. How's everybody doing today?
Good. What I wanted to do is start off and just talk about a couple things we talked about last time and kind of refresh our memories about where we are. First of all is, what is an integrated resources plan? It's kind of a lot of words up there, but basically it's a long-term strategy. It looks at a diversified mix of water supply and water conservation opportunities in order to meet both current and future water needs while addressing multiple criteria. There's a number of things that are important in planning out an integrated resources plan. Cost is an important one. Things like local control are important. There's a whole bunch of things that people consider important, and we want to make sure and take in those multiple criteria. Another important attribute of an IRP is that it very explicitly considers risk and uncertainty, and it's developed with stakeholder input. So why is an IRP needed? First of all, upper district's costs, as you're well aware, have increased significantly since 2007, and this is largely due to the cancellation of Metropolitan's replenishment discount. And as you're also well aware, the cost and reliability of Met's water is uncertain into the future. In their own integrated resources plan, which was completed early last year, Metropolitan was counting on the development of local sources of supply within the region for its success. And there's a number of local options that exist for Upper District, and some are more expensive than others. So the IRP provides a way to go through and evaluate those options. The scope of the IRP is to assess the needs, looking at projected water demands and seeing how those relate to firm water supply. You're going to see a lot of that today. And we go through a process of developing alternatives, which are different combinations of new local supplies, imported water, different types of projects that we can put together to meet that gap between demands and firm supply. Then we go through a process of evaluating those alternatives against multiple criteria, and those criteria is another aspect of what we're going to talk about today. And from that, we determine a preferred long-term strategy and document our findings. Our schedule, we're on schedule. We're in this period of we've completed the demand forecast and gap analysis. We're going to talk about that today. And we're moving well into the process of evaluating supply options and alternatives. And so we're going to talk about those objectives associated with them also today. We'll complete the process through the alternatives evaluation going into the February and March period, and then a final report in May. And with that, I'd like to ask Dan Rodrigo to come up and lead us through the discussion of the demand forecast and the gap analysis.
Okay. What we're going to do is walk you through the first technical analysis of the IRP, which was to conduct a water demand forecast for Upper District, and then to compare that demand forecast to existing firm water supplies, and I'll define what those mean in a moment. So we did a few things here in terms of our methodology. One is that we looked at the historical water production, the total water production, which is both groundwater production, surface water supplies, existing recycled water, and purchases from Metropolitan Water District. And that gave us a total monthly water production for the district. And we have that data, and we got that all the way back to 1980. So we looked at that data from 1980 all the way to present, and we did a statistical regression on weather and population, the presence of drought in terms of drought restrictions, and then we looked at the economy measured by unemployment rate. And we looked at those factors to try to explain the historical variations in water production in the district. This gives us a foundation for understanding how water demands respond to different factors. Then, from a survey of retail water providers, from the retail water providers in the Upper District service area, we obtained what we call water use factors. These are things like gallons per household per day or gallons per employee per day for commercial and for manufacturing type employment. We multiplied those water use factors. Well, first we adjusted those water use factors based on the things like passive conservation that we would expect from plumbing codes, not active conservation that Upper District or that Metropolitan Water District would try to encourage, but this would be passive conservation, things that would happen because of plumbing codes or regulations. So we adjust those water use factors based on passive conservation and based on other things like price and then the things like weather that we talked about and the economy. And then once we have those adjusted water use factors, we multiply those by projected demographics, households, employment, that we get from the Southern California Association of Governments that are tied to your service area. So that is the general methodology that we used for the water demand forecast. As we get into this, if you have any questions, please feel free to ask away, and I'll pause in a few places just to make sure everything is being explained in a way that you guys are able to understand what's going on. So we've got this historical demand. This is on an annual basis now. And this is just showing from 1990 to present, 2010. And you can see, is there a pointer on this? Where? Oh, there we go. Okay. You can see that historical demands have fluctuated quite a bit. Generally, there has been an increase in your historical demands. But we use that statistical model that I talked about to pinpoint what caused some of these fluctuations in historical demand. For example, in 1991 and 92, we had the first time that Metropolitan had drought restrictions in place. So that greatly reduced water demands. There was mandatory conservation, a lot of public education out there, and demands were reduced quite a bit. We also had some wet weather happening in 1992. You see a huge spike back up following that in 1994. And why was that? Well, we had dry and wet weather. So you can see that, you know, demands bounced back in just a couple of years from that 1991-92 condition. Then we had cool, wet weather. And then you see that, you know, little spike here, dry, warm weather caused that. We had in 2005, we had a very wet year, if you remember that year. So that reduced demands quite a bit. And then you get down to where we are in about 2007, right before a few things happened. One, in 2008 and 2009, we entered into the drought. And Metropolitan in 2009 and 10 put 2 years of mandatory restrictions in place. Also, 2008 was the start of our economic recession, which, you know, has been the worst economic recession we've had since the recession. And then in 2010, we had some wet weather, some extreme wet weather. So these factors, the wet weather, the economy, and the drought restrictions, have all resulted in a fairly significant drop in water demands. Those three things happened all at the same time: drought restrictions, a severe economic recession, and very wet weather. So this model that we developed helped us explain what was going on in terms of the historical demands. Does this make sense? Okay. So we got, one of the questions we were asked was, what happened between 2007 and 2010? Your demands were almost 200,000 acre feet in 2007, and they dropped to just above 150,000 acre feet in terms of total water demands in the service area. And again, we used that model, that statistical model, to parse out the components. So we estimate that this portion of the demand reduction was caused by the drought restrictions being in place, the conservation that happened because of that. The next bigger block was the economy, the recession, basically. And then a smaller part was due to the cooler, wetter weather. And so we were able to explain, basically, why your 2010 demands are down. So now let's talk about your future demographics in the service area. And again, we get this information from SCAG, which is the regional planning agency. And this shows the historical single-family and multifamily housing units in Upper District service area. And you can see there was a general upward trend. Now what we did is, you'll see here this little inflection point here. The original SCAG projection started in 2010, and it was just pretty much a straight line between 2010 and 2015. That was the original projection. What we've done is, because of the severity of the economic recession, we've assumed that line would be dampened and we wouldn't get this growth until a few more years out. So we modified the SCAG projection. We still kept the ultimate projection in 2030 and 2035. But we slowed the growth down, And that was just, it was our professional judgment based on what we're seeing, that the recession was going to have a lag in terms of recovery. There'd be a lag recovery. And not just in Upper District Service Area, but all of Southern California. We feel that there'd be a lag recovery. And so the other thing that's interesting is that SCAG, it's not as clear on this chart, but SCAG is showing that there's going to be more multifamily, a greater growth in multifamily units than in single-family units into the future. As the region densifies, that's probably not a surprise, you know, that there's going to be more dense development as land use starts to mature in the service area. Now, employment is a little bit more jagged. Historical, there's been some interesting, dips. There was actually a mild recession back in the early 90s, and it did actually cause some reduction in your commercial institutional employment. Your industrial employment, though, you're seeing a long-term trend of declining industrial employment, and SCAG is continuing to project that decline in industrial employment. Basically what we're showing in employment is not much growth from history to future. A little bit of growth in the commercial sector, but overall, because industrial is going down, your total employment is going to be pretty flat in the service area. Any questions on this so far in terms of the demographic projections and what they're telling you? So with that, we developed our demand forecast. And again, this is just showing the history that I showed before. And then when we're going out into the future, we're projecting these demands based on what we would call normal weather conditions and also a normal economy. But after we have this more sort of slow ramp up into what SCAG was showing as a demographic growth. And so we're showing this as our baseline demand is red. This is basically, if you just took the historical trend, continued it out, you'd get this red line in terms of demand forecast. The green line is with our estimate of passive conservation. And again, what I want to make clear is that's the conservation we would get without any intervention. You wouldn't have to spend money to get that conservation. It's going to happen because all new homes are going to be just more efficient because of plumbing codes and things like that. So this is essentially what I would call free conservation, if you will. It's just the efficiency gains we expect due to plumbing codes. The purple line is the 20 by 2020 conservation target. So as you remember, in the preparation of the 2010 Urban Water Management Plan, you actually had to say what your compliance demand would be for the new 20 by 2020, which is basically a 20% reduction in per capita use by the year 2020. And it's got an interim goal of 15% conservation by 2015. And the reason why it sort of goes down and flattens out is because it's based on a per capita estimate. And when you multiply those per capita estimates by your growing population, you get this little dip here. But this is the demand that you would have to achieve to get the 20 by 2020. Okay, so that's your target if you want to be compliant. Now, another consultant that's working real closely with us on the IRP is the consultant that's doing the Water Conservation Master Plan. And their goal is to come up with what is the best economic way to achieve this conservation, which means, you know, the gap between this green line and this purple line is what, if you wanted to be compliant with 2020, you're going to have to get through conservation or recycled water. That's another important thing, is that recycled water, any recycled water you develop, can count towards meeting this gap. So you don't have to meet it all through active conservation. You can meet it through some conservation and some recycled water, or all recycled water if you have that much recycled water to do it. So, we're going to take that information from the Water Conservation Master Plan, and we're going to integrate that into the IRP when we get that information. So that's the demand forecast going forward. Any questions on the demand forecast? By the way, I didn't put this on the slide, but the Metropolitan Water District forecast for your service area with passive conservation was about 5% higher than what we're showing. So we're actually a little bit lower than what Metropolitan Water District forecasted back a few years ago when they did their regional integrated resources plan. We feel that it's a little bit more accurate than the Met forecast because we got more recent information. We also did this information where we got the survey of the retail agency. So we feel like we've got more updated information, and of course we'll be providing this to Metropolitan in the next round of their forecast. Okay, so the next step then was to basically compare that demand forecast to your existing firm supply. So let me explain what that is. The first component of your firm supply is what we estimated is the natural safe yield of the basin without replenishment. And this goes back to the 1964 conditions of what the natural safe yield was estimated at that time. You could argue that that estimate might be optimistic because it was based on 1964 conditions. And as this area urbanized, less water is making its way into the groundwater basin. So you might look at that as maybe that might be optimistic. We don't know for sure, but that's one thing just to consider. The other thing that we did is you also get surface water. What we did is we looked at the historical hydrology of that surface water because it varies greatly. Some years you get a lot of surface water. Other years you get next to nothing when you look at it compared to your other supplies. What we did is we looked at the dry years, and we took an average of those dry years, and we said this would be the firm amount of surface water that you could count on. And then we added the existing recycled water, which is basically the non-potable recycled water for things like irrigation and cooling towers and such. We added that. And then the light blue area is what you got back in 2009 and 2010 under MWD's allocation. So we said if that you wanted to consider what the worst case would be, you add up all of these things, and that's your existing firm water supplies, what you could count on even in a drought. Okay, and then we compare that to the demand forecast that I showed you, and that's this red line. And you see that you're actually, you know, you have a few years of surplus until you get to, you know, what is it, about 20, maybe 2022 or so. And then your demands exceed your firm supplies, and that's this red area. And by the time you get to 2035, you have a shortfall of about 14,000 acre feet in a dry year. And what we did is we said, okay, now the IRP, what the IRP is going to do is it's going to look at what are the best ways to fill that gap. And we're going to look at it from the perspective of, you know, new conservation. We are going to look at it from what if we could capture more what we call centralized stormwater capture, so getting more, using the network that you have, maybe some of the mining pits and the operations, and getting water, more water into the groundwater basin, capturing more of that stormwater. We're also going to look at decentralized stormwater capture. This would be things like low-impact development, bioswales, things like that, that maybe could be achieved through ordinances, through city ordinances, or even county ordinances that would allow more water to either naturally percolate into the ground or direct reuse. There's things like rain barrels where people could capture water at their homes or even in their businesses and reuse that directly for irrigation. So those are examples of decentralized stormwater capture. We're going to look at what we call indirect potable reuse. This is where you take, you know, treated recycled water, treated to the point where you feel, you know, confident that's meeting your water quality regulations and goals for the basin. GRIP is an example of that, as you remember your GRIP project. We're going to look at that. We're going to look at other things like water transfers. You know, you guys wanted to get into the water transfer market of imported water. So we're going to look at these are the various options we're going to look at, and we're going to compare these options. Well, first of all, we're going to take these individual options, and the next step is to create what we call alternatives out of these options. So we're going to bundle these options, combine them up into different ways. One might be, what if we pushed recycled water to the max? So we would add all the recycled water options. That would be a recycled water alternative. Another alternative would be, what if we just did all of the stormwater options and only did all of those, and we would add up all of those options. Another one would be, what if we just heavily relied on imported water through purchases of metropolitan water and water transfers? And then we expect that we're going to combine some of those. Maybe we'll have some recycled, some stormwater, some maybe some transfers. So all of these alternatives that we come up with are then going to be compared against some criteria. And so that'll be the next thing that we talk about with you, is to get your feedback on that. But before we do that, I just wanted to make sure that if you had any questions, we could answer those or move on.
And I just want to ask one for clarification, maybe for the board, in case they're wondering. All of these numbers that you're putting up are upper district service area, basin-wide, right?
Not basin-wide, just the, that's right. Okay. That's an important point.
Okay.
It's just for the upper district
service
area. Any other questions?
Move ahead to criteria.
Okay.
Yeah. Any questions? I'd like to give the opportunity for the public. If they have any questions, please feel free to participate. Okay, we'll go ahead and move on.
Okay. Let's talk about objectives for a little bit. What are objectives? These are broadly stated goals for the Integrated Resources Plan. And for each objective, we will develop one or several performance metrics to help us evaluate how that objective is being achieved. So, for example, cost is a pretty straightforward one. Cost is a very important objective, and it's easy to measure in terms of dollars. Reliability is something that's also important, and we can assess a way to measure reliability also, and this allows us to compare some of the different alternatives that Dan was talking about. So these metrics serve as a very very important part of our evaluation process of the different alternatives. We've put together a draft list of objectives for your consideration for this Integrated Resources Plan. And what I'd like to do is go through this list, get your feedback on it, and see if there's anything we need to add or change. This becomes basically the criteria that we use to evaluate the different alternatives for the Integrated Resources Plan. So the first objective here is providing a reliable water supply. This objective accounts for droughts, climate change, and restrictions in Delta exports due to environmental regulations. Okay. The next is developing cost-effective solutions. And we look at both capital and operation and maintenance costs. So this is looking at the full life cycle cost associated with a project. Next is increasing the local control of the supply, and this accounts for the degree to which you rely on metropolitan for imported water. Another is meeting the basin water quality regulations and achieving basin goals. So water quality regulations are obviously hugely important, and meeting those regulations is assumed to be a baseline. If there's an alternative or a project that doesn't meet water quality regulations, that's a stopping point. It's a no-go. But there's things that are more subjective, like groundwater basin quality. So if two sources of water, say, have different total dissolved solids in them, they have different influences on the basin, and that's something that the IRP can consider. Another is improving the natural environment, and this includes things like greenhouse gas emissions, compliance with total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs. These are things that, again, are subjective and vary from project to project and alternative to alternative. And another is then reducing the risk of implementation. Some projects are much easier to implement and others are much harder. Doing some recycled water projects is a more difficult regulatory process, say, than doing a straightforward stormwater project. So these are other types of things that, that influence and different types of projects and alternatives. So these are six draft objectives that we've put together for the IRP so far, and I think it's a good place to pause and make sure that there's a good, solid understanding of what's in here, and make sure that we get your input and make any adjustments to these as appropriate. Any comments or questions on these?
Director.
I've been talking about initially when I got on this board, we talked about GRIP and developing a regional approach to water issues, and GRIP is although not we're not involved in GRIP, it's still a part of it, and still talks about what you've indicated in terms of water transfers and reliability and so forth, and also developing recycled water, working with other member agencies. One of the things that I see is still continuing that type of initiative, maybe on a smaller scale, maybe developing some joint powers agreements with other agencies, other MET member agencies, and non-MET member agencies. Where do you see this idea being in terms of your objectives of consideration, and what do you see as its feasibility for long-term goals?
So a couple things. A project like GRIP, a recycled water project like that, would get considered in a number of different ways in these criteria. First of all, it's something that where we'd see it reflected in providing a reliable water supply. You'd see it in it's something that would score strongly in increasing the local control of the supply, obviously. And also, you'd see it reflected in every attribute here. So a project like that is one that's identified and being considered in the different alternatives, the different types of projects that are available in alternatives.
So then, Mr. Ebersol, you're saying that that type of project or a similar project like a joint powers authority agreement with other agencies would meet most of this criteria?
Absolutely. The question that comes to mind as I'm hearing your question is the discussion of cooperation with other regional entities, right?
Right. Do you see any downside to it? I mean, obviously, it's you're going to be working with other agencies. Do you see any?
No, not at all.
And obviously, we need to have our producers have some buy-in into that, and they play a big role in doing that. Okay. That's my question.
Okay.
That's
all. Other questions, thoughts? Are there any other things that are important to you in terms of looking at projects that we haven't captured up here? We've talked about cost. We've talked about water quality. Talked about local control, the environment.
Director Fellow.
I think Mr. Trevino pointed out, I think the regional approach is the best way to handle it. We certainly have had good relationships with our two sister districts, Three Valleys and Four Cities. I like what has been presented here today. It's going to have to be a variety of things, too. And there's other things we cannot count on, and that's probably state funding and federal funding, appear to be vanishing very quickly. And again, another threat, and you've mentioned it a bit, is the Bay Delta. You know, if we don't solve that problem, and if there is a major catastrophe up north, 60% of our water supply is to Southern California will be cut. But I like the approach of doing a variety of things. I think the one thing we've got to get more creative about is stormwater capture. Cities don't know what to do. The COG right now is looking at, what do we do with stormwater? And I think if Upper and perhaps our two sister districts could come to some kind of plan or something innovative, I think it's probably going to be there where state funding, we'll see state funding and maybe federal funding come in, because this has been on the minds of most of the politicians for a long time. But and throwing into that mix, stormwater, more ramping up recycled projects than transfers in that area. But I like that sort of approach.
Mr. Chairman, I totally agree with my colleague. I think that one of the things that we really have to have an emphasis on is more local control of our resources. We cannot, and I think my colleague, Dr. Fellow, and my board will agree that we cannot rely on Metropolitan. And so we really have to work aggressively with our producers, our colleagues in the water industry, other member agencies, non-Met member agencies, and M-member agencies to develop an aggressive local control of our resources. And that's really my point.
Great. Okay. So the way that these get used is, let's say that you have, Dan talked about different project alternatives. You might have an alternative that includes water transfers and a reliance on imported water, and let's just, for the sake of example, take an alternative that relies very heavily on developing local supplies, okay? The question comes up then, how do we evaluate those alternatives against each other? And it's these objectives that we use to do that. So we would look at each of those alternatives and say, to what degree do those provide a reliable supply? Well, what we might find is that the developing local resources provides a more reliable supply, for example. It has more recycled water in it, more local runoff, things like that. On the cost side, that may involve developing a lot of new infrastructure and treatment capability. And so we might see that developing local projects to that high degree has a higher cost to it. Okay? That's sometimes an outcome. You talked about local control and a local source of supply. We'd see that the reliance on imported doesn't score very well there at all, but the development of those local projects scores extremely high there. And improving the natural environment, we might, for example, see that the local projects are better at reducing greenhouse gas emissions and things like that. So these objectives provide us a way to compare those different alternatives against each other. The question comes up, though, is how important is cost, say, relative to local control? And so one of the things that we're going to do as we move forward in this is we're going to, once we get this list finalized, and I think we're pretty close to that based on the conversations today, is that we'll be putting together a questionnaire or a form for you all to fill out, and this will we'll give this to Shane and it'll get distributed, to tell us how important each of these factors is to you. And the way we'll do that is to weight them. So some of you may think that may place a very high importance on that local supply and less of an importance on reducing the risk of implementation. Alternatively, what we see is cost can become a very important factor, and some people place a very high emphasis on cost, and others believe it's important, but not the key deciding criteria. So we'll get the input from each of you in terms of that weighting as we go forward here, and again, we'll do that with a questionnaire or a form to fill out in the coming week or two.
Director Fuller.
One of the things that perhaps wasn't mentioned, and I like this whole notion, we've been talking about having local control, and I think the best way to have local control is if we can clean up the basin and keep this groundwater where it's supposed to be. And how does, maybe you can answer this better, I haven't kept that much track of what's going on with the Water Quality Authority, but where are we in basin cleanup? One time we had 200 wells that were closed, and is it more costly to venture into transfers than it is to clean up the basin?
Well, there's a trade-off always between the cost. The Water Master, Water Quality Authority, and the producers have done an outstanding job so far of continuing to make progress there. The risk that I've asked CDM to capture in the context of this IRP is the increasingly stringent drinking water quality standards, perchlorate, chrome 6, et cetera. So there is a potential for a window of time that if those public health goals become MCLs, maximum contaminant levels, then we will again go through a period, as the basin has in the past, where we'll have a higher dependence on metropolitan treated water as additional treatment technology is added to those wells. And that's a risk factor that we need to take into account here. Because the basin is effectively the distribution system for the San Gabriel Valley, I see a continued long-term reliance on the basin and therefore a continued emphasis on having to clean that up. I don't see ever the San Gabriel Valley Water Association walking away from their leadership in cleaning up the basin.
Do you see, for a while we talked about conjunctive use with MWD. Is that something we can get that off the table?
No, it's absolutely not off the table. I cringed there for a moment because we're going through a pretty important conversation with Metropolitan and the other member agencies right now about the future of Metropolitan's replenishment program. And Metropolitan is today in a position where they have so much operating flexibility and so much storage capacity that they can really pick and choose where they put that water. And you see this, without going into all the nuts and bolts of it, you see this change in Metropolitan's philosophy about working collaboratively with the groundwater basins. It's unfortunate, but they've openly made statements to the effect they don't need the groundwater basins anymore. And so that's caused a lot of tension that we're trying to work through currently. Just last Friday at the member agency manager meeting, all the basin managers attended, and Carol Williams from the Water Master invited Metropolitan to sit down and negotiate a conjunctive use agreement. We've just never quite been able to get there due to the terms offered by Metropolitan so far.
Well, that's the problem at Met today, is that it seems to be very anti-groundwater basin, and you have a general manager who's really has really taken that out of the mix. But I think I always believed in conjunctive use. When was the first thing I did when I got on this board, and I was condemned for it, but then years later they came to me and they wanted to do it. So. But I think it's going to take maybe the power of the whole water industry here to go to Met.
I concur, because exactly what Shane had just said, you know, if the water quality standards are made more stringent, we will have to have more reliability on Metropolitan, thereby buying more costly water. And I would rather, as I say, look for the alternatives here locally, enhance local supplies as much as possible. And I agree with you, Dr. Fellow, that the thinking in Metropolitan is they've never really looked at groundwater agencies, they've never really worked with them. And I think it's going to take that type of effort, that type of working together with other agencies to get Met's attention that the San Gabriel Valley is very serious now about being independent and developing those supplies. I agree with what you said about the fact that it might cost having to the cost factor might be increased, but you know, if we're able to develop these local projects here, our valley is hurting in terms of employment. You know, this also will help maybe kickstart some employment opportunities, some economic opportunities throughout the San Gabriel Valley if we have these projects in place, and it'll, I'm sure it'll get Met's attention, because they've never really. You're right. They've never really looked at it as an area that they want to focus in, and I think it's important. But I think you're
absolutely right, and I think if we can put out some kind of power base here to show Met, if there's one agency that could go off of Met if we ever get that, this agency, you know.
So right.
I agree with you.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So.
Okay.
Good.
I don't have anything else on this. I think we've covered the objectives and taken care of questions there. I don't know if there's any audience questions. That
anyone from the audience wishing to make a comment or a question? Mr. Brown.
Steve Johnson has been monitoring the efforts of the Santa Fe Dam to get a pipeline through the dam spillway area. Discharge water other than the spillway right now, it gets the water only rarely. large area, 100 acres or so of ground that could be used for recharge. If the pipeline was built through the dam to take water out of the spreading basins, clean up from dirt and things, and spread it on the 100 acres of spillway that's above the gravel pits, that increases the amount of water into the groundwater basin. So that's a project that could be in the foreseeable future. Steve's been working on monitoring with the county flood because that's really somewhat their jurisdiction. But the upper district has a real involvement in that, in the sense that upper district is the area that would be getting more groundwater. So, yeah, that is something that is an immediate thing that should be put into the upper district's list of projects for the immediate future. And I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. I believe that's something we're actually looking at.
Mr. Brown's absolutely right. It's an excellent project. It's low-hanging fruit, and it will be evaluated in the context of the IRP. Okay.
Anyone else have any questions, comments? I also just want to make the comment that I agree with my two directors here. It's critical that we diversify our portfolio of locally controlled resources and push the San Gabriel Valley to less dependence on metropolitan. And I agree with Director Trevino that the cost to me, you know, personally, hangs low on the totem pole, because investing these resources and just being able to achieve these projects, you know, it may be a short-term, you know, economic burden, but long-term, we're doing something significant for the San Gabriel Valley and for our water resources. So definitely just want to make that comment, and thank you.
Okay. So we've been, just to close then, we've been working with very closely with staff in identifying all the different project alternatives that are out there and evaluating them in this IRP. As I said, these are the means that we're going to use to be comparing them to each other, and I think this will give you a mechanism to very clearly see the how each of these project portfolios achieves the things that are important to you and to understand the trade-offs between them. So thank you very much. Our next steps is that we'll provide you the opportunity to weigh the relative importance of these objectives. And we'll also be providing these objectives to the stakeholders and other to the producers and stakeholders, and give them the opportunity to weight their relative importance, and then we'll evaluate them. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone wishing to remove anything from the consent calendar can do so now.
Motion to approve.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
See in opposition? So moved. Information items are available in our packets. They're available in the back. Mr. O'Neill, attorney's report?
No report. We do have a closed session today, Mr. Chair, on one item of potential litigation.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, engineer's report.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a short report. We're at the end of the month. The Baldwin Park Key Well, as of January 13th, was at 234.1 feet. It dropped 0.7 of a foot this prior week. We've been reporting the key well dropping about a half a foot a week. It's now dropped about 2.5 feet over the last almost 2 months, not quite 2 months, but about 2.5 feet. So, and this is normal for this time of year, especially the fact we're not getting any rain. And if you notice, there's no water coming down the river. Spreading grounds are fairly dry. In the canyon, we're sitting now with about a little less than 20,000 acre feet total storage in the canyon. It's about a little over 20% of total capacity. Basically, we're at minimum pool. Inflow into San Gabriel still around 40 CFS. We're still seeing some inflow into San Gabriel Reservoir, but as you all know, it's pretty dry and there's just not much water out there. Rainfall, since we had a pretty wet start of this fiscal year, it's been pretty dry. We're now down to under 70% of average for this time of year. Last year at this time, we were at 220% of average. So big difference between this year and last year. USG3, everybody knows, is off right now. As your general manager pointed out, there's a lot of issues being discussed about replenishment rates, but USG3 is off. We did sample under the Title II program for California Department of Public Health. We did sample 50 wells.
during the month of December under that program, and back in November we did sample 86 wells. We didn't receive any notices of wells shut down due to water quality public notices, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Right, thank you, Mr. Johnson. General Manager's report.
Yeah, no formal written report, Mr. President, just to comment that I'm really looking forward to working both with the board and the producers and other stakeholder communities on the Integrated Resources Plan, the Water Use Efficiency Master Plan. It's going to provide us with a very solid foundation upon which to then move forward with a financing plan and start building some of these projects.
Okay. Director's comments? Director Trevino? Director Fellow?
Just one thing is that happy tonight. I'm going to be speaking to the Coral Foundation with Ken Manning about the San Gabriel Valley regional issues. Didn't know about it till yesterday, but he needed somebody. So I'm looking forward to that. Don't know what I'll talk about.
Okay, just want to take this moment to recognize our Valley County friends, Mr. Jonathan Contreras, Mariana Lake, and Ms. Lynette Pacheco. We also have Paul Solano from the Bassett School Board. Welcome and thank you for joining us. Again, I just want to, you know, say how exciting this is that we're implementing and moving forward with this IRP. It's really taking up our district and mapping out a great strategy to be able to take this district and its resources in a truly professional and innovative manner and just, you know, setting up this roadmap that's going to truly make a difference to our water supplies, you know, not only for the district, also for our ratepayers. You know, improving our reliability and having this local control is going to make a tremendous difference. And it's going to benefit all of us, from our, you know, local producers to the ratepayers. It's truly exciting, and looking forward to moving forward with this. Anyone wishing to add anything, future agenda items? Okay. Well, we are going to go ahead and adjourn to closed session. We'll resume regular meeting. Report on closed session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 5.956.9 to discuss one of them potential litigation. A briefing was delivered by staff, and instruction was given to the general management. No formal action was taken.
Okay, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.